and welcome to An Evening with Nirvana. It's a podcast where I talk to various guests from the Dune community about level design, map making, and content creation. Today on the show, I'm talking to Razik, creator of maps for Slaughterfest 2012 and Slaughterfest 3, as well as the fantastic Neon Crater and the Kako Award runner-up Judgment. You might also know them for their speedruns, which include Swim with the Whales, Stardate 2066, and Swift Death, among the nearly 300 demos they've submitted to DSTA. Welcome to the podcast, Razik. How are you doing today?
I am doing excellent.
That's good.
Good to be here.
Yeah, exciting stuff. Lots of things to touch on, for sure. And we will start with, of course, the thrill ride of a question. How were you first introduced to Dune?
Oh, wow. So, it would have been a long time ago. It's actually... amazingly, one of my earliest memories, I would be probably 3 years old or 4 years old, I think. I was sitting on my mom's lap, and I can remember sitting there, and she was playing Ultimate Doom. I believe it was E2, Episode 2. And I remember seeing a cacodemon and calling it a tomato and all of that stuff. It was interesting at the time. Like, I was afraid of it. And then I remember after that, I found the old Doom 95 disc, I guess, that came with our very first computer. And I tried to run it on, like, probably Vista, and it didn't run very well. And from there, I always knew about Doom from there, and I didn't really dive into it until about the end of 2010. I discovered GZ Doom, and I was messing around with a lot of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Actually sat down and played through all the IWADs, you know. And then I discovered Doom World and started learning custom content, or learning about custom content stuff, and playing through a bunch of that stuff. And
mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's kind of been there the whole time. It's just I didn't really dig into it about a decade ago now.
Yeah, and so when you played through those IWADs, which of them did you sort of enjoy the most, do you think?
I would definitely have to say Plutonia.
Okay.
I think most people know that I kind of revere Plutonia a little bit, which mm-hmm. might be not what most people like, I believe, but it's kind of a meme, honestly. The whole disliking Plutonia thing, I think. It's not the best. I'll admit, it's not the best by any modern standard, for sure. But I think out of all the IWADs, I definitely enjoyed it the most because of the challenge that it kind of had, especially when I was first playing.
Right. Well, I do think probably out of the IWADs, it probably holds up the best in terms of modern standards of gameplay.
Yeah. Yeah, for what they had at the time, considering what you could compare it to from way back when, I'd say it definitely holds up better, at least.
I think, I don't know, I do feel like there's a little bit of like a, there seem to be a lot of people now who, I guess they've come into the Doom community, they've never played the IWADs at all, and they've just played PWOG content, and the IWADs just seem like almost unnecessary to them, which is very strange.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I mean, you see pictures or gameplay of PWODs and stuff like that, and if you didn't know at all about what the IWODs actually are, you'd probably just dismiss them as lower quality old stuff and not really think about it, I guess.
It's sad. It's a sad state of affairs.
It's unfortunate. I think maybe the ports of the original games to, you know, like the consoles and stuff like that sort of keeps them relevant since their original game, you know, and
mm-hmm.
People who didn't have knowledge even of the games have played them now, so maybe that keeps it relevant now.
I mean, I would probably still put a lot of them in terms of quality over, you know, like 70% of PWOG content, to be fair. I think the other thing is that people are a little there's a little bit of bias where they are comparing them to the highest quality PWADs that are out there. But they're, you know, there's a decent amount of not very good PWADs that are released, so.
Yeah. There, I mean, there's a lot of content out there.
Yeah.
Most people will probably never play 90% of whatever is out there, you know? So, and then all the popular stuff, of course. Yeah, it's all this high quality stuff, and it sticks out because it's beautiful looking, or it's this really challenging gameplay, or really fun stuff. And yeah, you, like you say, you go back to the original game, and it's not quite the same, and most people would just dismiss it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's really fair to compare like Sunlust to Doom 2 or something, you know.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
They didn't even have an editor remotely close to the same thing to even try and produce something like that in a similar fashion, you know.
Yeah, well, they also didn't have the points of reference that the IWADs offered to create something like that. They were creating, right. You know, they were building Doom as it was, so, you know, very different thing. So on the Doom Wiki, at least, Slaughterfest 2012 is sort of listed as your first credited release, I guess. Was this, like, the first time that you worked in the editor, or, like, when did you start getting into making your own maps?
Well, like I said about how I kind of came into the fold with the Doom community, and I discovered GZ Doom originally. It was, like, the main port back then, I guess. Just, mm-hmm. You know, it was the flashiest one, so it stuck out. I actually really dove into modding stuff using Decorate and UDMF format and all that stuff.
Yep.
So I actually still have it somewhere on my computer. I have quite a few levels from way back then where I sort of piddled around in the editor and was learning it. And, you know, it's nothing great. It's a lot of 64 wide hallway stuff and short rooms and stuffed full of monsters and all kinds of weird Decorate stuff. So I never released stuff like that. I did have something at some point that was actually a precursor to that Slaughterfest map, the first Slaughterfest map that I submitted to the project. It was the E4M1 kind of tribute map yep. thing. And I actually posted that, but I think it kind of got lost at some point, probably when the forum stuff were changed.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Slaughterfest 2012, that was the first maps that I really like made and spent a decent chunk of time on, like refining and in the editor, messing around with it, balancing and play, like going through the whole development cycle to making maps and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And what, so you sort of played the IWADs and stuff, and what custom PWADs led you to wanting to like play and make Slaughter stuff?
I had a big thing about Plutonia 32, actually. Go to it.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
that's kind of like a proto Slaughter map, right? Man, it's been so long, it'd be hard to say exactly which ones in particular kind of guided me on that path. Probably Hell Revealed, I would say. Just because it was, I think it's on the top 100 WADs of all time list, right? I kind of vaguely remember going through that and just checking it for more and more interesting looking things to play.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of thought it'd be fun to have these big maps full of monsters and just, you know, sit there and blow them all away. Kind of that mindless gameplay style.
And was like difficulty something that you generally sought in other games before like getting into custom stuff and doing?
Not really. Before I really dove into Doom, I was kind of big on FPS shooters, multiplayer shooters and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So like Call of Duty 4, Halo 3, Battlefield, you know. I really dug into those kind of games, and I mean, I thought I was pretty good at them. It's, you know, it was just a hobby. So I don't really think the difficulties what attracted me to it. It was kind of just the experience, really, more of it, I think. Like overcoming this thing in front of you to just see it all the way through. And it kind of felt rewarding in its own way.
Right. Maybe some of that like competitiveness coming through.
Right.
Even in your single player stuff. So you said you sort of made a remake of E4M1. Was that like a favorite map of yours? Is that why you wanted to do it? Or was it just sort of like a fairly simple layout you thought you could work with for like a first attempt? Or why did you choose to remake that?
I had an idea. Because, you know, doing like episode one remakes is a kind of a thing that a lot of people gravitate to. And I thought this to myself, I wanted to be different. So why don't I do episode four instead?
Right.
And so I started with that. And then I actually made one around E4M2, but that one's been lost to time at this point. So it was kind of just the idea to be different. And it was around then, I guess, that Slaughterfest kind of started taking off. And it's like, well, you know, why do this by myself when I can put it in this project with all these other types of maps that kind of fit the same idea? And I ended up making two more maps for Slaughterfest 2012.
Yeah. And what I found was that all of your maps for SF 2012, they're quite different in terms of content, in terms of combat, sorry. Like map 11, which is the E4M1 remake, that's a bit more incidental. And then I think 13 is like very focused on set pieces, and 21's a bit more like open, sort of big open area, and then gets flooded with monsters. Were you sort of deliberately playing around with different combat styles, or did this just sort of happen naturally as you were mapping?
I think it's probably more deliberate. When I was making the second map, the kind of set piece focus one, I had an idea of what I wanted to do, kind of like the basic Crossroads style map layout, and just have these sections where they were just big arenas full of monsters. It probably came as part of playing through some of the other levels that were being posted for the project. I would, you know, do a little play testing. I don't know if you'd call it play testing or just playing the maps. I don't think I really gave too much feedback about stuff back then, but that's the second map, was kind of just trying to figure out how to set things up like that. It's just do set piece stuff. The third map was, I want to say, I kind of just wanted to make a big open area, and I had this really grandiose plan of having just a giant swarm of stuff come in from all angles, but that wasn't really working out how I wanted to. So it kind of just became each section of the map was separated from one another, and then it just happened to be everything floods in all at once, and you know, you just run around, there's just ammo and stuff everywhere, and I guess it kind of just established it became a normal slaughter map, I guess.
Right. And having played and, you know, also speedrun and made maps and stuff for like older Slaughter Woods, what do you think sort of separates that older style from more modern Slaughter?
Let's see. If I had to really describe it, I think the modern take on Slaughter really has a much more intelligent kind of design plan behind it. Mm-hmm. Where like players have developed all of these strategies, and a lot of the people who play these types of maps are the ones who are making these type of maps, right? So they kind of design fights with these things in mind. So you know, there's all these, like, they're not really intricate, but they're, you know, very specific patterns of movement that you can use to fight big groups of enemies. You know, I've heard terms like a U-strafe, circle strafe, you know, stuff like that. And the older stuff, like, you know, Hell Revealed is just, I'm just going to throw 1,000 monsters in this big boxy layout and give the player as much ammo as they need and see what happens. It didn't really feel like there was any kind of plan behind it. I think Slaughterfest 2011 and 2012 really kind of developed a more focused approach to slaughter maps in general. There might be stuff from before that I really haven't played before that might have sort of been the genesis of that, but...
Mm-hmm. And do you find that you have a preference between, like, the older stuff and the newer, maybe tighter combat?
I would say probably the newer stuff I would prefer.
Uh-huh.
It's a little more engaging, I think, you know, because you have to think sometimes about how to approach fights and resource management, stuff like that.
Yeah. I noticed that you sort of, after Slaughterfest, you worked on a bunch of community projects like Doomworld Roulette and Mayhem 2016. Did you get involved with them, like, to hone your skills at all as a mapper, or was it just sort of like, well, that sounds like fun, I'll just make a map for that?
Well, so I did two maps for the two roulette things. I think Alfonso was the one who hosted those.
Mm-hmm.
I think those, they just sounded fun. You know, somebody gives you this random prompt to make a map, and you do your best to sort of just build a map based around what that is. And it was a really interesting exercise, I think. You know, it was 2 week, I think, was the turnaround, maybe a month. I don't remember exactly. And I felt like it'd be a good way to sort of, yeah, I'd say honing mapping skill would probably have been a good way to describe the idea behind joining up, stuff like that. Because I wanted to sort of develop a style, I guess,
mm-hmm.
and sort of figure out how to make a consistent go at a map. Because originally making stuff was a really slow process for me sometimes. And then Mayhem 2016, I was actually invited to make a map for that.
Right.
By Markake. He DM'd me about the project, and I don't remember exactly the way he worded it, but it was basically, how would you like to make this 3,100 monsters slaughter map for Mayhem? And I was like, cool, how long do I have? And I think he gave me a month to make it. And so I was on board with that. And that was fun, I guess. It's kind of, you know, bringing both parts of it, because I had a little bit of experience making slaughter maps from before.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get better at making, like, having a faster turnaround on making stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, what's crazy to me is that there was a deadline set for these projects, and they actually came out within the deadline. That's the crazy part.
You mean the community? Like
for the community not... projects, yeah.
Yeah, well, actually, the third roulette never did get finished.
Oh, there we go.
Unfortunately. I don't think many maps were made for that project. In fact, Neon Crater, I took that map and put it into Judgment because it didn't really have a home.
Right. Well, I played the Solar release version of it. Someone had posted it up on the forums, and I really like that map a lot. I was wondering if there was any particular inspiration behind, like, the atmosphere for that map, because it's sort of low lit and I don't know, it's something unique about the way it looks that I enjoyed.
I'm not really sure that I had a hold on the overall atmosphere of it. It kind of just built from the prompt that I was given. But I think the contrast from the neon crater part of it, you know, which was like the main part of the prompt that I was given, it kind of just made sense to me that it was like a dark and mystical kind of location for this strange crater in the side of this hill or whatever. And it kind of just ended up that way, I think. It didn't really have much of a plan aside from trying to make something that fit the prompt.
Right. And how did you, like, start building that map? Because you had the prompt of, like, the crater. Did you start by just, like, I'll just put down a big circle or something and then build inwards from that? Or did you start with just, like, the lighting features? Or, yeah, how did you begin?
I think I probably started actually on the lower section of the map, because I kind of developed an idea that the crater would be like the finale area, you know, that's where the exit would be. There'd be a sizable little fight there or something. Because the prompt, if I remember what the prompt was, it was something like the neon crater above paddock. And I didn't know what a paddock was. I had to look up what a paddock was. It's like a yard or something.
Yeah, like a field.
Yeah, like a field or something. Yeah. So I kind of thought backwards the way it was given. So I've probably developed the lower section first and then built up to where that main finale area would be. It's been so long. It's really hard to fully remember exactly how that process would have happened, but yeah. that seems like how I would have done. That's at least how I would approach it now, I would say.
Distribution center. I suppose Judgment was technically in development already at this time, but was this like your first proper release with custom monsters and things like that working in GZ Doom?
Yeah, it was, and it's actually based on one of the very first maps that I made, one of those really early mess around maps that I mentioned. Kind of just the layout, really, and then it expanded outward from that. It was another case of, hey, this looks like a fun thing to do, so I'm going to do it. And it was, you know, it was originally for the Vine Sauce Mapping Contest.
Yep.
Which was the year before, or probably a few months before. I don't remember exactly when. So I spent a lot of time in 2 weeks on making that whole thing. And probably a little more time than I really should have at the time. But yeah, I really dug in and wanted to explore how intricate of a layout, well, not maybe not intricate, but how complex of a layout and all these cool things that GZ Doom really has to offer, which, you know, I like them. I don't think for me that it really... It opens up too many possibilities almost. It makes it hard to do stuff just because it's too much. But I think what I produced in that amount of time, it was restrained enough to be interesting enough to actually release by itself and not just be what entered into that contest. When I actually released it later on, I did a bunch of changes to it to make it more... refined, I guess.
Right. And I'm kind of interested because you started in GZ Doom and this WOD was in GZ Doom. Or, you know, for GZ Doom, I guess it would have been... I'm not sure if UDMF format was out, if it was Hexen format or whatever, but... I'm curious why you didn't end up sort of moving into making more UDMF stuff. And instead went sort of back to MBF.
I would say the most prevailing factor is demoing, demo recording and stuff like that.
Right.
Speed running. You know, because by this time I had quite a few speed runs that I'd done, or I don't know, speed runs. They weren't really, a lot of them weren't fast runs by any measure. But you know, demo recorded and so being in a mapping format that supports that kind of became important to me. And I thought it'd be cool if you know, what I was making would be accessible to speedrunning, because it'd be really cool to watch people play what I made, I thought.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, that makes sense. That is definitely... It seems like, yeah, like, being too feature-heavy or, yeah, not having demo compatibility, those are sort of the main things that people rub up against when they work with UDMF and stuff. So Slaughterfest 3, obviously... These maps came out a long time after they were actually made. But I guess I was curious how you felt like your mapping style or like sensibilities had changed between SF 2012 and making maps for Slaughterfest 3.
How they would have changed. I think I definitely leaned into the more set piece kind of focused style. Just based on the two maps that I made for Slaughterfest 3. Just more like focused fights that make good use of the monsters that are there, not necessarily having hundreds and hundreds of monsters at once.
Right. And I guess like what I noticed was that your maps sort of, they often avoid like super strict lock-ins, like the opening of map 4 in Slaughterfest 3, you can kind of, you know, run through and take the next fight and, you know, maybe combine fights a little bit. Do you think this is due to speedrunning and like wanting to keep the maps a bit more open for routing and stuff, or is that just how you tend to make maps?
I think it's more of a tendency that I just make maps that way, because personally, you know, I've experienced maps where they have some sort of lock-in fight or situation, and you can finish what's going on before the lock-in is over, so you're just kind of sitting there waiting for bars or to lower or a door to open or something, uh-huh. And I try to stay away from that happening at all in a map. And then I don't like everything to be confined into a lock-in or a set piece. Having incidental stuff in between or having some open-ended areas where stuff happens makes a lot more sense to me, just for breaking up the action in a map.
Yeah. And do you tend to like build around speedrunning at all, or do you try to avoid it? Because I know that some people that I've talked to who are speedrunners, they actually find that it ruins the speedrun for them if they have, like, built-in tech and stuff.
Most of the maps that I've made were probably long before that I really understood a lot of speedrunning tech, uh-huh. Like glides or, you know, line def skips and stuff like that. I didn't really consider pacifist gameplay style at all, you know, things like that. And in fact, when Judgment was first released, you know, I kind of went through the 2 or 3 months of release candidate, and at some point I really dug into making every map compatible with Nomo and pacifist, so that there'd be some way to complete every map in both styles, especially Nomo. Like any lock-ins or anything, I set up ways for them to be much quicker in Nomo, since nothing's really happening. It's right. Just doors would immediately open and stuff like that. But probably if from now on, I probably would think about stuff like that when I'm making maps, I would say. But I don't know if I would intentionally add skips. Maybe if it was something difficult, which would be really fun to witness someone do, you know, it'd be really cool to see somebody accomplish something if it was really difficult. And you, or figure it out even. And like, if you knew about it, no one else did, but someone figured it out, that'd be really cool.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of things did you do then to make it faster for Nomo? Like, how did you make it so that you could get out of lock-ins quicker in Nomo than when monsters were present and stuff?
It's really simple, really. I would just take any kind of, if there was like a, you know, well, most stuff would have a voodoo scroller closet or something somewhere. And I'd just take everything that's going on in there, and I'd condense it down to a smaller closet that was just whatever was necessary to open the area. And when monsters are on, there would be a single lost soul floating there to block the voodoo from moving so that it wouldn't function for someone playing in ultraviolence.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously in Nomo, lost souls are that special exception where they're monsters, but they don't count for kills on the kill percentage. So they do get removed, but they don't count.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's some other people that do similar things. Like, I know a lot of people will do like one of the big trees sitting right next to a wall to block a voodoo scroller or something. So it's not like,
I think
it's not anything too complicated.
Yeah, and some of his stuff. I mean, I use the Lost Soul thing in Fractured Worlds, actually, for difficulty setting stuff. But one thing I had to do was go back in GZ Doom, and I had to use Decorate to replace the Lost Soul to make it not count to kill percent, because for some reason in GZ Doom it does count to kill percent. So,
yeah, that's kind of a default thing. I don't remember exactly how I changed that. Or if I did or not for the final release of Judgment, I might have. But
I just noticed, really... or I think maybe Gazebo was testing for me in GZ Doom, and he was like, oh, like, I can't get 100% on this or whatever. And I was like, what? It turned out it was like the lost soul in the wall.
Oh. Yeah, I'm not sure why they have it that way, but it's kind of always been that way from what I remember, so...
Well, I read a thing with Graf, and I think his reasoning was that, I can't remember what the exact numbers of the release are, but in the original Doom shareware release, the Lost Souls counted towards kill percent. So he made it the same as that. Which...
Probably before Doom 2 and the Pain Elemental.
Exactly, yeah. Which he claimed was like a lazy reason to remove it from kill percent. And so that's why he reintroduced it. Which I don't know if I agree with necessarily, but, you know, here we are.
Yeah.
So in terms of Judgment, talk to me about, like, the early beginnings of that ward, because it started a long time before it was finally released.
Quite a while ago. So it was actually 2013, the summer of 2013, I remember it. I sat down to make the first map that I made, which would have been map one, which isn't the same map that's actually in the WOD now. I lost that map to an unfortunate Slade incident.
Oh, no.
But I did remake it as close as I possibly could remember how it was originally. So it's essentially the same. It's just not exactly the same. But regardless, I had a dream about Doom. And I had a dream about that map. It was kind of just like a general view of it that I saw. It was a lava-filled crater. There were some mine shafts. I remember the Mancubus sitting on the rock to the side shooting at me the whole time. And I kind of just took that idea and I threw it down in the editor and I looked at it and I'm like, this is kind of cool. It's not a slaughter map. It'd make a great map one for something. I'm going to start making more focused maps like this and see what happens. And I kind of just started laying out these ideas and throwing four or five of them together and building a map based on those ideas. Like I had a list. I'd have ideas pop into my head during the day and I'd just write something down in a list for later. And that kind of took care of the first half of the WOD, really, for the first 3 or 4 years that I was making maps.
Mm-hmm. And was the plan always to have, like, a lot of custom monsters? And were you working with DHACT originally, or did it start as, like, a GZ Doom WOD that then turned into Boom, that then turned into MBF21?
So, I started in CL9, in Boom.
Mm-hmm.
And I did have a little bit of DHACT stuff going on. I took the SS guy and I turned him into just a quick shooting zombie man. So like in between a zombie and a chain gunner, right? And I did something with the Keen. I think I just used all the frames from the Keen, and I did the Baron having two attacks at once, or not once, but in succession. Just the small little stuff, and that really kind of carried until about the start of 2016, I would say. And that was after I played Valiant. And Valiant kind of really set me on this whole exploration of how much more custom can you get and retaining that demo compatibility. So I bumped it actually up to MBF 11, right? And I really like explored how much I could get out of the DHACT stuff. Like I pulled frames out of as much stuff as I could to make it still function like Doom should feel like, right?
Yeah.
Like I pulled 10 frames out of the Archvile's fire animation to use for something. I took every monster has like two states in their pain states. So I took one of them from each of those and just made it one state. Same thing with their idle animation. So if you ever came across a sleeping enemy, they'd just be standing there. And it's almost more menacing in a way when they were like that. But I'd take those frames. And it ended up in the original format after I did all that work for the DHACT. In MBF 11, I actually had almost everything that was in Judgment there.
Right.
Wow. And yeah, it is actually, I honestly wish I had kept a copy of that DHACT because it was somewhat impressive. Even to me, I was honestly kind of impressed with how much I pulled out of there. I had all four of the variant zombie men. I had the Nightshade, the Fallen, the flaming skeleton revenant looking guy, the big Archon. I think the only real thing that got added after I swapped over to MBF 21 was the baby Cacodemon and the secret boss, the Shaman.
Right. I mean, this all sounds very reminiscent of, I remember Ribix, when he was making Jump WOD, showed me sort of the states list and stuff and what he'd done. I mean, he didn't have any monsters, obviously, so he ripped a lot more out. But it is interesting what you have to do to accomplish those types of gameplay changes in, like, the old DHACT format.
It's tricky. There's a lot of things that can go wrong, and there's not a lot of things to tell you what is going wrong, so you kind of have to work with it a little harder to figure out exactly what you need to not do before you can really figure out what you can do.
Yeah.
Seeing Signal 11 and having the port just exit out with no error happened quite a lot.
Right.
But that was almost more fun than it was annoying, just trying to figure out what to do.
And so when did you actually decide to change to MBF 21?
It was not very long before I actually released the first release candidate. I started converting everything in like March, maybe April of 2021.
Mm-hmm. And was Decker Hack around for that? Or were you still using DHACT? Like Wacket?
I actually don't use either. I do everything in Notepad.
Oh, wow.
If you can believe it. Yeah, it's I don't know if that makes it easier for me or what. It kind of made it a little easier for me to understand exactly how everything kind of works and I keep everything organized, so I have everything situated in a way that's familiar to me. So I guess it's easier for me to do it that way. But I use WACT as a reference, usually. I don't know anything about dehacked. I've heard it's pretty simple. It's basically decorate, for the most part.
Yeah, decorate, yeah, basically. Just functions the same as decorate, and then just converts everything into dehack strings. Which is quite nice.
Yeah, that sounds like it'd be pretty easy to get a hold of and make things a lot simpler, but...
Yeah. So, how much, like, you have all these custom monsters and things, how much work went into, like, balancing them for the new sandbox and stuff? Was there, like, a testing process for each monster as you introduced them, or was it more just like, let me put these in and then see how it plays and then do it based on that?
So when I actually built the dehack stuff, I probably had a little more than half the maps already made. So it's mostly like you said, I just sort of put it all together, and then I just sort of threw it into the maps, and then I would go back and just play through all the maps and see what worked and see how that felt to play against the monsters. And I did a lot of tuning on like health values and how quickly the stuff attacks and how quickly they move, just to really kind of put it into a their own places. Because I always felt like there was some spots in the monster roster where there's holes, like there's stuff missing. And I kind of wanted to fill those particular holes and have a couple of things that were just cool. Like they felt new and cool to fight, basically.
So what kind of holes in the sandbox do you feel like you wanted to fill?
I do believe that we're missing a kind of a low health, high threat flyer. So basically the fallen, the burning skeleton bird thing that I put in, my idea was basically, let me make a revenant that flies, and I gave it half health because it's, you know, probably going to be a much more annoying enemy to fight most of the time. So yeah, like a low HP flyer was something that I really thought was missing. And then I think probably the biggest other thing that I wanted to have was it was kind of like the same role that an archfile has as like an area of denial tool, but not based on a line of sight attack. So the Azazel, which is the goat man with the wings, and he throws all the Mancubus fireballs. You put him in a hallway, he really fills that hallway up with fireballs. So you either have to duck out, take cover, or really focus on him to get him down as a threat. And I felt like that was a much more, maybe just a different way to have this sort of area of denial threat, rather than just plop an archfile down, because archfiles introduce a lot of other gameplay elements at the same time. So.
Right. And yeah, I mean, it's interesting you talked about sort of Valiant and stuff, because I do feel like Skillsaw is like the main person that I think of when I think of like well done custom monsters introduced into the sandbox. Do you think there was like a decent amount of influence from the way, like the places in the sandbox that Skillsaw tried to fill as well?
I would say, yeah. From Valiant specifically, the Arachnorb, you know, the Arachnorb is that low health, kind of almost a higher threat flying monster. So I really liked him. I wasn't too fond of him randomly spawning out of the dead Arachnotron. That really got annoying for speedrunning, because I did some max runs of Valiant when it first came around. I guess the Hell Knight replacement, the Pyro Demon, the one that has the spray of fireballs.
Oh, yeah.
I really liked him, so that's what I kind of based my idea for the Archon of Hell that I put in Judgment, who is much tankier. He's above a Baron. He's kind of like a mini boss. And he has that spray of attack of Baron fireballs and his own little green fireball thing that he has. I kind of wanted to add the kamikaze guy, but I felt like it might be a little on the nose. I also couldn't really find a way to fit him into the roster, I think. So I left that one out.
But the thought was there.
The thought was there. I like the kamikaze guy. I always remember that one fight from Valiant. I think it's in one of the middle levels somewhere. You drop into this canyon with nukage and everything, and there's this platform in the middle, and there's just like 200 kamikaze guys, and you get a super chain gun, and you just mow them all down. That was just really fun. And
yeah, they're definitely a good enemy. One of the better custom monsters, I think, in terms of. I don't know if they necessarily fill a gap in the sandbox, but they definitely make for like fun encounter design, I think, as a mapper.
Right. Yeah. They're that one part that's unique and different, and it's something cool and it's new and it feels like it fits, right? Because I think that's another thing about DHEC stuff is sometimes that stuff gets added to a project and it feels like it doesn't really fit and it almost detracts from the experience a little bit.
Yeah, maybe definitely a factor in some like Z-Doomy things. I think steering further and further away from Doom for sure.
Like stealth monsters.
Well, you know, I think there could be a place for them. I'm gonna make there a one entirely based around stealth monsters.
Yeah, if you really set up something to utilize the stealth monsters, it could be fun.
I think the stealth vial is kind of cool. I think that
yeah.
You know, he just appears and suddenly he's attacking, you know. You could do some cool stuff with that, maybe.
It'd be a good fit into, like, a horror kind of setup or something.
Mm. You go.
I was just going to say that I've played quite a few Z-Doom levels that kind of just sprinkle in stealth monsters, and they really kind of dampen the mood of the rest of the level.
Yeah, they definitely don't work when they're just arbitrarily placed, I think.
Right.
Yeah, so what I was going to get to is Judgment is, it's like fairly incidental, I guess, with, you know, set piece encounters throughout. You have talked a little bit about how, like, your gameplay sensibilities have changed a little bit over the years. Do you think that these days, that's sort of the gameplay that you tend to prefer, is sort of that mix of incidental with set piece stuff?
Yeah, it definitely is probably what I'm more attracted to overall. I like some more challenging stuff here and there. I can't really name anything of recent, but you know, things like Stardate 20x7, that kind of level of challenge stuff. Not necessarily Slaughter stuff.
Right.
It's kind of weird. I kind of took a 180 on Slaughter. I'm not really that big of a fan of the large-scale macro Slaughter kind of maps anymore. I enjoy them. It's just I don't think, personally, that I'm the best player, so I don't fully appreciate them sometimes just because I'm not quite good enough to play them without having to retry fights here and there. But, yeah, incidental and set piece style, I think I definitely prefer that kind of thing because it feels much more like intelligent design. And it's fun to like disassemble that kind of thing and figure out the best way to do something and it adds another layer to gameplay, I think.
And in terms of like making a WOD that spanned sort of 8 years or so, did you end up going back to your earlier maps like constantly over the years and updating them? Like, did you feel that need to sort of go back and update the visuals or change gameplay aspects that you maybe didn't enjoy anymore? Or did that not happen so much?
Absolutely. So, and the 8 year time span actually was not on purpose, I would say. Because in 2016, I couldn't spend as much time working on it as I wanted to. I had job responsibilities I had to take care of first and foremost, so it really limited the amount of time I could spend. I stopped speedrunning even just because I wanted to spend more time on mapping and stuff. Yeah, about that time, after I finished doing all the dehack stuff and going through all the maps that I'd already had, yeah, I did a lot of changes to earlier stuff. Like map 6, I completely remade that map because I didn't like the original version of it. It felt too small compared to what it is now. So to fit everything with the changes that I made, I just kind of rebuilt it around the same general layout. I just made it more expansive and made stuff more interesting to fight rather than just being 3 small scale slaughter fights, really. Even though that's kind of what it ended up being anyways, it just felt more engaging compared to how I originally built it. Mm-hmm. And I think more so I developed a visual standard that I kind of build maps to. I was having problems with accepting what I made, I guess I could describe it. Like, I didn't feel like what I was making lived up to like a community standard of detail. Like, they looked kind of plain and it's just kind of personally how I felt about it. So I started to just sort of work at stuff and figure out ways I could make things look more detailed without inhibiting gameplay or anything like that. So I'd go back to the older maps and I'd put in spots that were outside of the play space, but they added to the detail of the area, like, you know, just ledges with stuff on it and open spots to the sky and texture changes and stuff like that. And it was really after the first release candidate I did is when I really kind of went through and did a whole bunch of gameplay changes, because I'd watch people play the maps and go through and figure out what was clunky or what could be approached in a way that made something not fun. I tried to make it where that wasn't something that could happen, or at least it would minimize the annoyance that it could cause.
Yeah, I mean, it must be difficult. It must be difficult over that span of time. I mean, I know that even with Fractured Worlds, it wasn't so much a case of, like, you know, my sensibilities changing or whatever, but I would introduce new resources and stuff into the project, like new textures and things like that, and then I would have to go back into previous maps and, like, you know, I would put in a little bit of those newer textures so that there was, like, more consistency between the maps, I guess. So even in that sense, I was going back and, like, editing things in previous maps over and over and over again. So I could imagine with so much changing in that period of time, it must have been a challenge.
Yeah, it did break a few things here and there, and that was always fun to deal with. And yeah, like you said, going back and having new resources that you wanted to use and they'd fit elsewhere, and it ties everything together, you know, theme wise. Yeah. Especially on a shorter set like Fractured Worlds would be, I imagine would be a lot more involved with that kind of thing, just because you'd want everything to sort of fit together since there's less maps overall.
Yeah, and I was already shifting theme a lot between maps, so I was attempting to keep some level of, like, cogency between them, otherwise I feel like there was the threat of it all feeling like a bunch of separate projects, like, smashed into one.
Yeah, like a compilation wad.
Yeah, exactly. So I wanted to talk about speedrunning for a little bit, because you've obviously done a bunch of mapping, but you've also done a bunch of speedruns. Was Doom your first speed game, or were there other games that you ran before?
It was the first game that I took it any kind of serious in, I would say. There was games that had time trial stuff that I did, and I enjoyed that kind of thing. So when I learned about demo compatibility for Doom, and specifically UV Max stuff, which was kind of the way I like to play the game, it kind of made sense that I'd try it. And I kind of enjoyed having to go through levels, especially challenging stuff, and do it in one life, and do everything in the map, and that 100% completion. It felt really nice. So yeah, Doom is the first and the only speed game that I've really done.
Right. Do you think there's something that makes Doom unique in terms of speedrunning? I'm not sure if you sort of watch other speed games or anything.
I don't really sit down to watch other games be speedrun. I kind of have a little bit of knowledge of some games that I enjoy here and there. But I think what really sets Doom apart for speedrunning is all the custom content. The fact that it's not just the original games. I can't imagine the community would be as large as it was or is if it just was the original games that were being speedrun. No. You have all these maps, all these levels of challenge, all these categories, all this. There's just so much to do, and it's something for everyone. And that really sets it apart. And I think that's why I enjoy it so much, is there's so many different levels to play, and all these levels that I really love. I only speedrun things that I like playing. So having so much stuff to choose from overall just makes it something I can do consistently.
Right. And I think one of the first times I ever became sort of aware of you was your speedrun of Swim with the Whales, map 3. Because I played that map and I really enjoyed the map and the WOD. And then I was like, I can't remember if it was, maybe it was YouTube or maybe it was the actual demo itself, but I just remember being like, how the hell can anyone beat this map, you know, saveless? I guess I was curious what initially made you want to run that map.
That particular map is one of my favorite maps of all time. So I was really inclined to try and demo it. I personally, I think Swim with the Whales is my favorite work by Ribix. And map 3, it had that sinister soundtrack. It had like this surreal feeling of almost hopelessness, but at the same time, it's a fair challenge. And at the time, it was unlike anything I'd ever played up to that point. And I just really wanted to do it. I wanted to be the first one to do it. I don't remember if I was or not. I don't think I technically was the first to get a demo on it, but I think at the time I was maybe the quickest for a little while. And then much better players than I got a hold of it and brought the time down a lot. But I really was compelled by that map, and I really wanted to get that demo. So I'd spent a lot of time doing it, and eventually got it. It was one of the best things that I had accomplished by that point, I think.
Right. And when you're running like a large, challenging map like that, what's the first thing you do when you start speedrunning it?
So a large map like that, typically I'd have to go through and route it in a way that stuff that's really difficult needs to become easier to do consistently. Because if there's really hard things in the map, you know, that's where you're going to lose a lot of attempts. You're going to get cornered and die or run out of ammo, and it's just going to be slow, or, you know, something like that, depending on if you're just trying to beat the level or if you're trying to actually make a good time. So getting in and routing and really breaking down individual fights or certain segments, you know, learning where all the possible resources are, when to use them, when to grab them, is probably where I would start on a level like that. And then from there, having to actually build the route and kind of work through it over and over again to really memorize it. And that takes more time the longer a level is, obviously, because you got to keep track of all these things where every secret is, when to get the secret, how many of whatever monster you're supposed to have taken out by that point. And it's a lot sometimes. But yeah. Bringing down those scary bits to a more manageable level is probably where I would say I'd start the most often. And because that's usually what has to go to get a faster time in the long run is just throwing yourself at those hard parts and hoping that you can get out of them in an attempt.
Yeah, and then it's sort of you practice each segment individually, and then the challenge becomes sort of stringing those parts together so that you're like, I go here, now I go here, without any pauses where you have to kind of think about where to go next, I guess.
Right. And you also have to keep up a little bit of adaptability, because you might use a little more ammo than you're used to using, or you might have more ammo than you're used to having at certain points. So, you know, maybe you go into some fight when you have two extra BFG shots you can use, and that might make things a lot easier, or you might save a little more time here or there. And for long maps like that, that can really make a difference.
Yeah. I remember, I mean, I'm not a speedrunner by any stretch, but I did do a Sunless 25 run just because I liked the map when I was playing through it saveless, and I was like, maybe I'll try and go for an okay time. And in the one that I eventually just, like, I ended up posting up that run because it was okay. But I didn't realize I had all these extra rockets. Like, I'd done much better on a previous section. So when I got to the stair fight, I actually had all these extra rockets, but I didn't realize. So there's, like, this terrible point in the demo that I can never look at where I SSG things for, like, a minute when I could have just rocketed them. And it always makes me cringe.
Hate when that happens. Sometimes you can't avoid it because of where ammo is in the map, but I've had quite a few like first exits on demo attempts where I'd leave the map and have like 400 cells left for a BFG, right. And I'm just like, well, where can I use all these cells and speed things up? And that's probably the first thing that you start to revise once you start actually throwing down attempts.
I never learned to revise it clearly. But I was curious how much, like, you talked about routing the map, but did that route sort of change over the course of the run where you found sort of more optimal things? Because it's such a big map, I would imagine routing's like a big part of it.
There is a lot of different ways to complete that map in different orders here and there. And I actually did two demos of that map. The first one was kind of just in order, I guess, would be the best way to describe it. Just taking on each part of the map as you get to it. And then I really sat down later on, probably, I don't remember the time difference between each demo, but when I did the second attempt and took off over 6 minutes of time, I really kind of figured out more of which things I could do in what order to make it the quickest. Like, and it's been so long since I did it. I kind of vaguely remember trying to get to the BFG much quicker so I'd have access to it for other stages of the route before I would have on the previous demo that I did. Because like I said, the previous demo was really kind of just doing things in order and trying to survive, because it's not an easy map by any measure.
Mm-hmm.
It is a pretty tricky map to actually play through, but
right. And what is like the toughest part, do you think, of that run? Is it the Cyber Fiesta or is it the final fight?
The Cyber Fiesta is kind of it's almost a meme, really. It's you're either going to catch too many rockets or they're going to consistently infight with the things that are in the little windows. Yeah. And getting there earlier in the route really helps with actually getting through attempts, because if you get unlucky, you die and you have to restart, right? So I would say the Cyber Fiesta, it's not really, it's not the difficulty of that part that makes it difficult. It's just the fact that you can get unlucky and there's not really anything you can do about it sometimes. If I had to pick what was the most difficult, it'd definitely be the ending, the finale fight in the other realm part of the map. I mean, even once you get there and you see what all is in there, you see that assembly of archviles and cyber demons and all the turreted monsters and everything, and it's really kind of scary, honestly, when you get that far. Because again, there's just a lot of ways that you can get caught out and just get annihilated before you can react to anything. You know, an archvile finds you and sneaks up on you in a bad spot, or you get cornered by too many cyber demons at once. But you know, watching some of the other people who've done demos for that map, they figured out ways to approach those kind of things. So
yeah,
there's ways around it, but I would say that's definitely the most difficult part for mm-hmm. me would be the ending.
Right. And Stardate 2066, that's another ward that you did a lot of runs for. I think you have UV Max runs for all of those maps. Did you have a favorite to run out of those, and maybe a least favorite?
Ooh, it's been a while. I would say my favorite run for that ward would probably be my map 4. Probably map 4.
Mm-hmm.
Least favorite, I would say, is probably the last map, map 7.
Yeah.
If only for the ending.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because I think it was Zol who was running it, or a couple of people have run that map now, but that final fight seems pretty inconsistent, I will say, and very rough.
I still can't really think of a way to get past that and do it consistently, and I lost so many runs to that particular spot. It kind of really just pissed me off more than it was supposed to, I guess. It felt bad getting that far in the run and then just getting blasted 7 times by archviles and not being able to really do anything about it.
Yeah.
It's been so long since I've played that map, though. I feel like if I revisited it and sat there for a little while and figured it out, I could come up with something. But yeah, map 7 of that one was probably my least favorite map to run.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because it has that initial wave of like Revenants and Archviles and stuff. Well, first you have to do the big Archvile fest at the very beginning. And then mm-hmm. it's the wave of Revenants and Vials. And then you get... there's the Cyber Demons on the podiums that you have to kill. So there's a lot of ways to just kind of get instantly killed.
I don't think I really understood the concept of two-shotting Cybers at that point either. So I kind of just... If I remember, I kind of just threw everything I had at them from a distance and hoped they would die rather quickly.
Right.
Because getting close to them was at that point... the nerves, even getting that far, and I remember being pretty low on health, and there not being anything else to pick up anywhere. I just remember from a distance firing away at them, trying to bring them down without risking dying, of course.
Did that end up being like a pretty satisfying demo, though? Or were you just happy it was over, really?
That was definitely one of the instances where it was just happy. Like, I was happy to be done with it. Like, it was the final map, barring the secret map that I didn't actually do a demo for, because I don't remember if I even knew it existed at the time.
Right.
Yeah, it was like, oh, it's over. I'm done. I beat it. It's relief. It was definitely relief. And I don't know if I really felt as proud as I could about it, just because it felt like I got lucky more than anything, but... It definitely felt good to finally be done with it.
You take those, I feel like.
Sometimes you have to. I mean, you can't just be the best at everything. There's only a few people that are the best at everything, right? At least when it comes to speedrunning.
Well, I don't know if it's about that. I feel like you can maybe not necessarily be the best, but you can be the best at a given map, you know, a given run, or I feel like there's a lot of leeway to make your own little place.
Yeah, true.
What was the appeal of Swift Death for you in terms of running it?
The how short the maps were, for sure.
Right.
You know, that was really the first time I kind of took on maps that were I mean, some are even less than a minute. Some are within the realm of tens of seconds long. So it really kind of just opened up putting multiple attempts at a time into maps like that, and actually trying to bring down times, because a lot of the Stardate 20x6 map runs that I did were actually just first exits. Like I just got to the end and I didn't really do any kind of refining of route and stuff like that. I was just trying to beat the maps, really. And I just thought it'd be cool to post the demos, I guess. But Swift Death really kind of got me into routing and trying to do things as fast as possible and figure out what works where. And them being really short maps really kind of facilitated that. Because back then, you know, we didn't have DSDA Doom. We didn't have restart without closing out the port and loading up the batch file again and all that. So
yep.
It was really different.
Mm-hmm. And because the maps are so small and they're sort of built around pretty tight strategies a lot of the time, were there many opportunities for like improvisation or routing at all?
Some maps, from what I recall, were a little more open-ended. There were some maps that were kind of just built around like a central idea, so you just kind of had to go at that particular idea and try to do it as fast as you could. And that's usually the shortest maps were like that, where you just get in there, you accomplish, you know, killing the 12 enemies that are in the map and get to the exit real quick. And some maps had like 40 enemies and there'd be a teleport ambush here and another section where the wall lowers here and you can go, you know, one way or the other. And that was more of which order of things do you do? Do you open everything, try to get infighting happening, you know? It was really dependent more on the map, but it was for the most part, it was those open-ended maps where you got the changes in routing that you could really figure out.
And do you find that you now like have a bit of a preference between doing smaller maps and doing longer maps when you speedrun stuff, or is it more like, is it entirely based on how much you enjoy the map?
It's definitely if I really enjoy playing something casually, I'll want to do demos for it, to speedrun it. I don't know necessarily that there's anything that I've speedrun that I didn't enjoy, that I didn't like specifically set aside and want to do. When it comes to shorter and longer maps, I'm kind of not really particular about it, I would say. Shorter maps are nice because it's, you know, you do more attempts for them because they're not as long of a run. So you can spend more time trying to improve them, you know, seconds by seconds. And then, you know, there's longer runs, like some of the more recent longer runs that I've done. There might be 15 minutes long of a max run, for an individual level. And for a map like that, refining it is fun. But at some point realizing gains is really taxing, and it kind of drags it out a little longer than I fully commit to sometimes.
Right.
So yeah, probably around that 15 minute, 20 minute mark is probably the longest kind of map that I would want to do speedrunning for.
Mm-hmm. So no detools in your future.
I've actually done some detools recently. Detools are different for me, I think. The longest run that I've done is an hour and a half long D2L. And it's kind of like the crown of going through an entire set of levels is kind of what I approach it as. I like what I've been doing recently is going from the start of a project and going through each individual level and trying to really optimize individual levels. And then at the end, going through the whole thing in a D2L run. For the D2L runs, once you do all that routing on individual levels, it kind of builds into this route by itself for the D2L. It saves a lot of time on that initial stage of doing an actual run, right? There's a little bit of prep that you have to do because you're playing continuous, so you have more resources usually. So knowing where you can utilize that kind of thing throughout the whole run overall is a little bit of work, but doing D2Ls, I've actually really enjoyed all the D2L stuff that I've been doing lately. So I'll probably stick to doing that.
Yeah, it's definitely become a lot more popular over the last few years, I feel like, doing D2L runs. Maybe thanks in part to, you know, Derek doing Sunlust and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that definitely brought a lot of attention to these super long, challenging runs. I mean, you know, there's like Hell Revealed D2L. I don't know how recent. Maybe it's been pretty recent. Not that that's the most challenging thing, but it, you know, that's like a 6-hour run, and it's crazy sometimes. We've seen the UV fast D2L of Plutonia and TNT in the past year. So D2Ling has become much more common, I would say, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So since Judgment, you've worked on a few community projects, Junk Food and stuff. Do you have any new WODs you're working on at the moment? Any new MBF 21 shenanigans in the background?
Well, I have a plan for something I've kind of started to assemble resources for. And it's actually, I want to kind of go back to where I started. I kind of want to build this focused episode of kind of medium scale slaughter maps.
That sounds good.
That incorporate my kind of focused on set piece incidental in between kind of style, just kind of combining all the three elements of stuff that I've done before and see what happens.
Cool.
And then there's another project that I'm working on with some other community members. It's kind of under wraps for now.
Right. I feel like that's usually the case when I ask these types of questions.
Well, it'd kind of lose its charm, I think, if it was completely out in the open. It's not exactly the most secret thing either. There's probably a bunch of people who will know what I'm talking about. But it's kind of a meme-y thing, so.
Oh, right. I think I might be aware of it, yeah.
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, I made a map for Tugers.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I don't know exactly how soon that's supposed to be coming out, but that should be interesting for some people, I think.
Well, Tugers was what I thought you were referring to. As the
no, it's it wasn't actually. The other thing has been an idea for almost a year now, which is unfortunate, but I think we're getting ready to really set down some work for it.
That's good.
No, I finished my map in about a month for that, trying to beat the first deadline, but then deadline got extended, so. I think a little longer, and then that might actually get released. We'll see.
Yeah, there's some weird and interesting stuff in that project that I've seen. Looks kind of cool.
aside from that, there's always the possibility of a much larger project in the future I would work on. Hopefully nothing that would take as long to make as Judgment overall. Yeah,
another
like
8-year mammoth.
Yeah, there was outside factors that really slowed down how quickly I could get stuff finished. So I'm almost glad though that is how that ended up. Because it could have came out in like 2018 as a MBF 11 project, right?
Right, and, yeah.
And speedrunners don't like comp level 11 from what I've seen.
It's not a great comp level when combat's involved, yeah.
So when I was actually building maps for it, I tried to kind of facilitate minimizing the problems that it introduces for combat. It almost became not easy to notice those changes that MBF 11 brought when I played through the maps. But again, that could also just be bias from having tested them the hundreds of times that I did, you know?
Yeah. Well, I guess if you omit a lot of like cyber infighting and stuff, then it probably won't be quite as noticeable, because that for me is the biggest thing you notice.
Right.
Cyber demons just turning around and deciding to kill you at random intervals.
Yeah. I think part of that too is I try to avoid setting up stuff in such a way that infighting is really easy to facilitate. I guess I'm kind of like anti-infight because it's a little cheesy to me sometimes. Not that I particularly try to completely prevent it, you know. But if I want it to feel earned when it gets set up, I guess. So having infighting not function normally, it kind of felt like it wasn't a problem because the way you would have to set up infighting in maps that I was making was it was a process. So by the time it would have become a problem, it wasn't a problem anymore, right? That delay between when monsters wake up and they're allowed to infight in MBF 11 would be over by then.
Yeah, right. Definitely a strange comp level, but also a unique problem to have making a one, because it's very, I mean, it's not used very much in MBF 11, I suppose.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to really be seen from now on either.
Well, yeah, I mean, MBF 21 does everything. Because, I mean, what was nice about MBF 11 was that it did fix a few things that didn't function very well in Boom. But then it also had the infighting problem. So MBF 21 fixes those things, but then it fixes the problems that MBF 11 had. So, and then adds a whole bunch of extra stuff. So really, it's just the superior choice now.
Right.
So to the final question, what is your favorite Doom monster and why? And maybe what's your favorite custom monster you made for Judgment and why as well?
Okay. Let's see. If I had to pick a favorite Doom monster, I know someone's going to hate me for saying, but I'd have to say a Pain Elemental, actually.
Nice.
They introduce a lot of chaos into scenarios. You know, suddenly there's this thing spitting out lost souls and filling the room with nonsense, and they kind of become a priority, and sometimes that they're just kind of annoying and they're kind of a funny enemy to play against. It's almost like a love-hate kind of thing that I have going for them. A lot of people really don't like them, but I think they get a bad rap.
I think once you learn the nuances of dealing with them, they're not too bad. Because I think when you start out, you're like, I can't stop them easily from producing lost souls. I can't use the rocket launcher against them, a lot of people feel like. But if you get right in their face and you can like actually physically block their ability to produce lost souls, which I think is like a really cool aspect of them, in terms of like building fights around them. And then the rocket launcher is actually really good against them. You just have to get kind of used to the rhythm of fighting them.
Yeah.
So there's like, I think there's a lot of like really cool things that you learn about the pain elemental as you get a bit better at the game. And that's why, along with like target prioritization stuff in set pieces, I think they are like just a really unique and really fun monster.
There's you mentioned the rocket launcher. That's exactly the inspiration I had for map 11 of Judgment.
Mm-hmm.
The map, you start with a rocket launcher and there's pain elementals and good luck basically. it was one of those things that a lot of people were really either really not enjoying, or they really thought it was funny or entertaining to play. And of course there's other parts of that map too. There's this fast melee monsters that I made, the wraiths, and then there's also the first time you ever encounter the spider demolisher, which is perfect because I was going to segue into that as being my favorite custom enemy that I created for Judgment was the spider demolisher.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, it's just the spider mastermind but upgraded. It shoots some rockets here and there, and then of course it has a BFG. I made it because I wanted the mastermind to not be such a borderline useless most of the time enemy.
Yeah,
because they get so easily stuck, and they just shoot annoying hit scans at you, and they'll infight with everything. And I really wanted to make them just like a powerhouse, like a big threat, something that could be built around, so something that an entire encounter could be focused on. Like in map 11, you have the centerpiece of the boss room is where the demolisher is, and there's crushers acting as cover, and you have to dance around and avoid the BFG shots and all that. And it was kind of an interesting way to make the spider mastermind not as much of a pushover.
Yeah, and that's a very honorable cause to take up, I think, because they are they're almost sad to watch sometimes, especially in slaughter maps.
To see them get took out by like two or three imps that invade their hitbox and just scratch them to death, it really is just it's hilarious. Don't get me wrong to see that, but when they're supposed to be this big nasty threat, it kind of just comes off as silly. I managed to minimize that. I actually made it to where if you're too close to it, you'll get blast damage. So basically it stomps on you if you're next, like right next to it. So anything that gets too close to it will just get stomped on and get killed before they can just melee attack her to death.
Right, yeah. Yeah, there's a there's a fight at the beginning of Entropy where it's imps and a mastermind. And there was more than one occasion where he would literally die to one imp, which wasn't great.
It's so sad.
It is, yeah. But, you know, that's just what you have to deal with when you're that gigantic, I guess.
It's just a unfortunate consequence of block map stuff, I guess.
Yeah, the hitbox is definitely a little bit weird in Doom. I guess also the consequence of using squares for everything, but you know, that's what they had to do at the time. Thanks so much for coming on, Razik. It was really interesting because I don't know if I actually mentioned this, but I mean, I said it was the first time that I was introduced to you, the Swim with the Whale speedrun, but I think it was like the first Doom speedrun that I ever actually watched was your Swim with the Whales run.
Oh, wow.
So, been aware of you for a long time and always been a huge fan of SF2012, one of my favorite WODs. And Judgment is also really cool. I've always liked custom monsters, and even though I feel like they're not executed very well a lot of the time, I really liked how Judgment, like, you went the whole hog with it, I feel like, in terms of, like, really putting in a ton of custom stuff, like custom decorations, custom monsters, and I thought it was really fun. So, yeah, really enjoyable chatting to you, and thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I had a good time.
Great. Well, to everyone listening, thank you, and I will return next week with another guest. So, yeah, get real pumped up for that one, and I'll see you then. Well, Pixdrift has subscribed to the highest level on Patreon. They are now a Doom God. So I'm giving them a spicy shout out at the end of the podcast, as promised. If you'd like your own shout out, you're going to have to match Pixdrift's incredible generosity. So that's really on you. But yeah, thank you. Thank you to all my patrons, but mostly and really only Pixdrift. But yeah, thank you to everyone.